Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Healthy Conflict, Happy Couple, How to Let Go of Blame and Grow Stronger Together by Lisa Gray, LMFT. Narrated by Ann Sprinkle. Introduction. Tony and Joe shuffle into my office. They look scared, which is understandable. First sessions are so intimidating, and it's my job to make them comfortable yet productive. On their introductory questionnaires, they both said that their marriage is good. They just have one problem they haven't been able to solve, which is their different parenting styles. Joe thinks that Tony is a pushover and too lenient, and Tony thinks Joe is a drill sergeant. This should be fairly straightforward, I think, but when we start to discuss the problem, that's not how it goes. "You let them do whatever they want. It's irresponsible," says Joe. "Irresponsible? You want to talk about irresponsible? How about that time you spent money we didn't have on your precious car?" Tony explodes. "Oh, you want to talk about money, do you?" says Joe. "Let's talk about how many shoes you have in your closet." "And this is why I never want to have sex with you," Tony fires back. Well, this can quickly get out of hand. This is what we therapists call kitchen sink fighting, a fight that starts with one topic but quickly dumps into the mix every issue going back for years. They'll just keep going with every complaint they've ever had if I don't stop them, but of course I do. Sharon and Pete are a totally different story. Their questionnaires contained a host of complaints. Sharon hates how Pete is so stodgy, never deviating from his routine, and she said she feels bored. Pete feels like Sharon wants to just abandon the kids and go on luxury vacations they can't afford, and he's not that interested in going places with her anyway because she's gained weight. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have a lot to unpack and discuss, and I plan for some intense sessions. But again, when we start to discuss the problem as a group with everyone face to face, that's not how it goes. So, how can I help your relationship? What would success in therapy look like? I ask. Both of them hem and haw and mumble. "Well, we'd be happier," Pete says. "Yeah," says Sharon. "Can each of you tell me one thing the other person could do that would make you happier?" I ask. "I'm not sure," says Sharon.
"Me neither," says Pete.
Oh boy. These two were pretty clear on what's bothering them when they were filling out questionnaires, but then it appears they have nothing to say. Neither of them seems willing or prepared to discuss this in person. I feel like I'm working way too hard to get any traction. Some couples blow up and escalate quickly, willing to yell about any perceived slight they have felt for the last 20 years. Other couples avoid conflict at all costs and can't seem to talk about anything of substance. These are two ends of a conflict continuum that I see, along with everything in between, in my therapy office. If you're listening to this book, I'm guessing that you are struggling with conflict or with trying to resolve problems with someone important in your life, and you might not know where to turn. Wherever you fall in the conflict continuum, I can help you identify your conflict style and give you a roadmap for better resolutions. It may feel like a big challenge now, but by the end of this book, you'll be armed with healthy strategies for managing conflict with much greater ease, and you'll feel much more comfortable in conversations that speak to the conflicts you and your partner typically have. So, what do I mean by a roadmap? In the beginning of a relationship, it's like the two of you are setting out on a journey with no destination. You aren't on a timetable, and you don't have anywhere you need to be, so you feel very in sync, and things flow smoothly. It's very easy and natural. Who needs a map?
But over time, you might diverge on what your goals are and how you should be getting there, or you may discover that your timetables for travel don't match. You start to feel differently about things that used to seem so simple. You have to decide which road you are taking and when and where to stop. And if only one person wants a change in the route, the whole thing shifts. By the time people come to see me, they're usually pretty out of sync. What we need to do is come up with a roadmap that works for both people, with clearly defined rules about what vehicle they are using, where they are going, and the roles they are both playing. Unfortunately, one reason this can be so hard is that most of us never learned how to fight. Almost none of us have had any kind of training or education in conflict management. We learned algebra and chemistry in high school or college, but no one ever taught us how to have good relationships, or if they did, it was a small unit among other topics in a health class. But relationships are widely accepted as the bedrock of satisfaction in life. Looking back on our lives, we aren't talking about professional success or achievements. It's our relationships that we value. They're the most important thing, and yet no one ever taught us how to have good ones. What's more, the messages we do get about relationships don't always address the reality that conflict in relationships is inevitable. No two people will align perfectly in every respect and always get along, and that the key is not to be conflict-free or struggling through the same fights over and over, but to know how to get through the conflict to the other side. Many of the couples who come to my office tell me that they've been having the exact same fight, sometimes for years, with no resolution. And these are intelligent people. In my local area, we have lots of nationally known scientists. These people are working on quantum physics and such. And yet, for all their knowledge, they're still circling the drain with their partners, arguing over the same issue they've argued about for as long as they can remember. The weird thing is, many of the problems these couples have are relatively easy to solve. It's not that the solution is so complex or unreachable, but that they have never learned how to solve it. They either get distracted by a bunch of other complaints, like Tony and Joe, or they avoid the problem until it blows up like a volcano, which is what happens with Sharon and Pete. Or they focus on the topic of their fights instead of the process of how they fight. But once they have someone help them with a roadmap to the landscape of conflict, a system for understanding what's actually happening when they fight, they can find resolution and be on their way. I hope in this book to give you a clear, easy-to-follow roadmap to work through conflict. Using the strategies contained here, you may not be able to resolve every problem you have as a couple, but you'll be able to have more productive discussions in a friendlier, more collaborative manner and resolve at least some of them, and learn to fight for your relationship rather than against it. Doesn't that sound worth it? How to listen to this book. I'm a big fan of books where you can just start anywhere and find something useful. Unfortunately, this is not one of those books. Listening from beginning to end will be helpful because the information builds on itself. It will be difficult to follow later steps if you haven't absorbed what's been presented in earlier chapters. Part 1 of this book introduces you to conflict styles and offers some tools to help you understand your own history with conflict. Unless you've learned formal conflict resolution skills, your own conflict style will largely be a reflection of whatever you learned as a child or in your formative years. Your conflict style will often operate in ways you can't quite control because you don't actually know that you have one. The first part of the book will also help you cultivate the mindset you'll need to put the book's information to use. Some of the messages we received about conflict as children are just not useful or true, and we need to correct our thinking before we begin. I'll give you a list of things to avoid when fighting and some tips on how to do it. And lastly, part one will talk about managing overwhelm and your own body's responses to conflict. Conflict can trigger a fight or flight response, making us behave instinctively in ways that may keep the conflict going, so we need some tools to combat this. Part two presents the roadmap for healthy conflict. It starts by exploring the setup for productive conflict and offers some tips for how to begin, which is crucial because conversations that don't begin on the right note often do not end with resolution. Part two then breaks down how to have a successful conflict conversation, covering all of the elements that make for good solutions to the problems we often navigate in relationships. Throughout this book, I've included client stories to dramatize conflict in relationships. These stories are fictitious and don't represent any people I've worked with in my practice. Any resemblance to real clients is purely unintentional and not representative of our actual work. Most of my clients rush too quickly into their own solution, yelling. Think about it. Before you even enter an argument, you know what you want, right? You have a solution, and you probably think it's the best and maybe the only possible one. Because of this, couples don't spend enough time trying to really understand each other's position and brainstorming possibilities. So, one strategy I always recommend to couples seeking to have productive conflicts rather than repetitive or constant ones is to break down the argument they're having into two conversations at two separate times. First, you want to have a conversation in which the only goal is to gain an understanding of each other's position, no solutions allowed. Only after this has been accomplished can you have a second conversation focusing on problem solving and solutions. This approach can be a challenge at first, but it really works. I can assure you that if you practice it long enough, you will be able to start moving toward having just one conversation because you will have the skills to follow the roadmap, which will get you past unproductive diversions and toward the real heart of your disagreement. But for now, I'll teach you how to have two separate conflict conversations. Part 3 covers some additional topics, the handful of topics or buckets of content that are typically grounds for arguments between couples. Here, I will give you some specific examples of how arguments about these topics can be conducted and resolved. Then, Part 3 will help you troubleshoot the kind of conflicts you and your partner are getting into and the struggles you might have practicing the skills in this book. From my own experience reading self-help books, I imagine you'll get to the end and still have questions. What about this situation? What if that happens? It is, of course, impossible to address every conceivable circumstance, but I will try to answer some of the more common questions and concerns that I've come across so that you can respond well to whatever comes your way. Throughout this book, there will be exercises to do, and some free tools are also available at newharbinger.com/51697. I highly suggest that you pause to do the exercises. As we all know, conflict is difficult for most of us. Just hearing about how to do it well isn't going to do the trick. I like to tell my clients that expecting them to handle conflict differently overnight would be like handing them a unicycle and telling them to go ride it around the courtyard. they won't be able to do this at first. They could do it eventually, but they'd have to practice, and that means on the cycle. They'd have to fall and get back up. Learning how to handle conflict is a process that takes a lot of practice. So, get a notebook to do your exercises and respond to questions. And if you're listening to this with a partner, make an agreement that you will do the exercises together. If you have a partner who is unwilling to listen to this book with you, or who is just uninterested, commit yourself to trying some of my suggestions to see if you can change the conversation for the better. Conflict is a skill. Many people tell me that they're just not good at conflict, or they tell me, "I don't like conflict," and I just laugh. No one likes conflict. It's not our natural state to enjoy being in disagreement and at odds with people we care about. But while some people are, by nature, more patient or less impulsive, none of us is really born knowing how to get through conflict when it arises. Ultimately, conflict is a skill, and as such, it can be learned just like any other thing we've learned in our lives. You don't have to like it. In fact, you can dislike it for the rest of your life. But you do have to get good at it. Because, as you'll learn in the chapters to come, healthy relationships actually require conflict to thrive. And if you want a healthy relationship, you will need to learn this skill. Think of it like going to the gym. When you first go, you can't lift much, and boy, does it hurt. But over time, you can lift more and more, and you aren't even as sore as you once were. Conflict is like a muscle. The more you use it, the easier it will become. I promise. I'll note that while much of this book will be written assuming a partnership of two people, the advice in this book is applicable to all types of relationships, as well as to partners of all genders. It also doesn't have to be listened to by both you and your partner or partners. Sometimes a relationship that's in conflict can feel like a dance that's going wrong. You and your partner are missing steps or are out of sync with each other, and it just doesn't look or feel good. Can you fix a dance with just one person trying? I believe you can, although there are some additional considerations. When one person changes a dance step, the dance has to change. There simply isn't a way for things to stay the same. If only one person is changing, though, they can expect some pushback, even if the old way of doing things wasn't working. However, if there is a firm, kind, and consistent invitation for the other person to join this new approach to conflict, they often will. It's true that sometimes they won't or can't, and then you can choose whether to stay or go. But if you can accept that sometimes you will be out of sync, you'll still have many more skills for the conversations that you do have. I'll talk about these specific considerations in later chapters. Moving forward. When Tony and Joe come in to see me now, we first talk about exactly what topic we are going to discuss and then move through the roadmap. We work to start the conversation about the conflict from a calm and grounded place, to move through the problems as problems, and to help Tony and Joe hear each other out rather than jumping to solutions. Premature problem solving is really just each partner pushing for their own way, or getting stuck in blame and anger without a truly productive exchange of feelings and needs. Does that mean there aren't 100 other topics or issues? No, but if we solve just this one today, then we're one step closer to healing their relationship. When Sharon and Pete come in, we first center ourselves and commit to having a tough conversation. We might plan something for after the session to calm them following the discussion, and then we dive into the roadmap and they willingly address a problem. Do you want to join these couples in learning how to have better conflicts in your relationship? Conflicts that strengthen your relationship by helping you truly understand each other and work through tensions before they tear the relationship apart? Let's get started. Part 1. Foundations for Healthy Conflict. Chapter 1. Why Your Childhood is Important. Almost no one who comes to see me wants to talk about their childhood. I blame Dr. Phil and the rise of TV and online advice givers. People nowadays want concrete guidance, steps, and strategies, and that's not a problem, except we still have to talk about your childhood. Why? Well, if you think about it, your family of origin is where you learned almost everything. The same people who told you that 2 + 2 = 4 and the sky is blue also told you a lot of other things, some overt and some covert. They might have told you that you talk too much. They may have actually said this, or they may have conveyed it with nonverbal cues that you became good at interpreting. Maybe they told you that you were worth a lot, or maybe they told you that you were worth nothing. You likely believed them, whatever they told you, and in whatever ways, and that makes sense. These were the people shielding you from the big bad world. They had it together, as far as you knew, even if they really didn't. It's beyond the scope of this book to tell you what to do with all the wrong messages you might have received in your upbringing, but here's where this book will help. To correct any wrong behaviors you've learned, directly or subtly, about fighting, conflict, and anger. When clients tell me that they never, ever saw their parents fight, I think, uh-oh, we have a lot of work to do. Because it often means that the conflicts their parents had just festered, unspoken and unaddressed, or perhaps there wasn't enough intimacy between their parents for there to be any fighting. Other people say their house was basically a knock-down, drag-out fight 24/7, which is also not good. In some cases, people tell me that their parents got along okay, but siblings or some other member of the family taunted or abused them, and the parents did nothing to stop it. Ultimately, even if you consciously now know that what you witnessed wasn't healthy, it is still likely all you know. Granted, maybe you've educated yourself a little about conflict over the years. You may have white-knuckled your way into doing something different with your partner, but you still find yourself falling back into old patterns from childhood when you get mad or stressed. It's time to take a closer look at some common conflict patterns or styles so you can begin to understand your own and your partner's styles and how they might be meshing or clashing. Conflict styles. There are multiple opinions and labels for different conflict styles, but I prefer the Thomas Kilman Conflict Mode Instrument. Many resources talking about conflict limit the styles they cover to a simple dynamic of avoiding conflict or pursuing it, or establish conflict style based on personality or temperament. The Thomas Kilman 5-style model is designed to account for all personality types. I also like it because some communication styles, such as accommodating or compromising, are generally seen as positive, but this model acknowledges how they also can be detrimental. As you hear about the 5 conflict styles in the Thomas Kilman model, think about which of these you saw growing up from your caregivers, siblings, or friends, and which you exhibit. Accommodating. The accommodating style means that you're always ceding your needs to the needs of others, basically, always giving in. Imani remembers growing up in a traditional household where her dad worked long hours and came home grumpy, and her mom was a traditional homemaker. Who knows how the dynamic began, but by the time Imani could observe it, it went something like this. Imani's dad would come home tired and irritable, and her mom would have dinner waiting. Sometimes she would ask her mom to intercede for her on something, to talk with her father on Imani's behalf. Mom would intend to have this conversation, but when she tried, the pushback from dad was immediate and intense. "Can't you see how tired I am? Everything I do is for you, and now you're complaining?" he would yell. I bet you know what happened next. Yep, Mom would apologize, back off, give Dad a back rub, whatever would make him happier. And as a result, Imani has an image of her mom that becomes smaller and smaller over the years. Not physically, of course, but the more her dad got his needs met, the more unhappy her mom was. You might empathize with Imani's struggles if you grew up in a home with a similar dynamic. Imani hated how her dad treated her mom, and she despised the weakness she saw in her mom. But whenever her boyfriend Bob comes on strong in an argument, she finds herself shrinking back. Her boyfriend, a pretty cool guy, is direct with his questions or statements about how he feels. He's not being hateful or mean, he's just really comfortable with conflict, and he's trying to have a dialogue. But there's something about the fact that she might be making him unhappy that Imani just can't stand. Because Imani's starting point is accommodation, I suggest working together with Bob to approach conflict in a way that Imani can initially feel comfortable responding to. With practice, Imani starts trying to assert her needs more. Bob doesn't yell or leave or insult her when she does this, as she has feared. In fact, he often is happy to accommodate her. Avoiding. Avoidance is a pretty insidious conflict style, and one which a lot of us saw modeled growing up. Mary remembers her mom standing over her dad, yelling about a multitude of things, while her dad didn't come out from behind his newspaper. People who avoid conflict often do it because their experience of conflict has been so uncomfortable. The way Mary's mom approached conflict surely didn't encourage her dad to put down his newspaper. He knew that Mary's mom would never be satisfied, no matter what he said. So he didn't say anything. Mary also remembers her dad working in the garage or staying up late to make sure her mom was asleep before he went to bed. Over the years, Mary's mom gave up, as many people do when they're faced with a stone wall. These days, when Mary goes home, it feels like two people living parallel lives who have nothing to say to each other and almost no interaction. Nothing has been resolved, and neither of her parents is trying anymore. Mary doesn't want to be like either of her parents. She wants to be able to calmly and effectively work through problems. However, she came to see me because her boyfriend Gerald has said he will leave if she keeps giving him the silent treatment when she's upset. She doesn't want to give him the silent treatment, but whenever he lodges some kind of a complaint, it just shuts off a switch inside her, and she literally feels like she can't respond. I asked Mary if Gerald would be willing to come in with her, because she needs some supported practice at saying her truth and not having it come back to bite her. But even if Gerald won't come, I can help Mary start to approach conflict with other, less risky people in her life so that she can refine her skills before trying to practice them with Gerald. Practicing with less risky people might look like telling the checker at the grocery store that you received the wrong change, telling the server at a restaurant that your food isn't quite right, or resolving a minor conflict with an acquaintance who isn't crucial to your life. As Mary works her way up to more...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?